Welcome everybody to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's monthly leadership forum. Today we're excited to have Bob Zukas. Bob is the CEO and founder of Digital Directors Network. It's the world's only organization working to advance the practice and profession of digital and cybersecurity risk oversight in the corporate boardroom. He's an adjunct professor of management and organization at the USC Marshall School of Business, where he teaches corporate governance, strategic management, and global business issues. Bob is a conference board ESG Center Fellow and a retired PwC advisory partner, where he worked and lived in four continents across 20 countries on the front lines of globalization. I want to hear more about that. He's the author of the book Social Inc. and the co-author of the number one new release in information management on Amazon, The Great Reboot, Succeeding in a World of Catastrophic Risk and Opportunity. He's also authored several book chapters on digital and cybersecurity risk oversight and writes regularly in Forbes. Bob's global career allowed him to live in Saudi Arabia, Hong Kong, London to Tokyo, and various cities across the United States. Awesome. And now you're in Manhattan Beach.
I am, yeah.
That's awesome. That's great. So I just first want to welcome you officially to our show. If you want to get a hold of Bob, his website is digitaldirectors.network and www.thegreatreboot.info. He's also on Twitter at Bob Zukas. That's Bob Z-U-K-I-S, and same with LinkedIn. So Bob, I've done this for how long now? 15 years, and every month, and I always ask the same question. So I read your bio, which is great. I want to hear all about the Hong Kong and different places, Saudi Arabia. But if you could just talk a little about from your heart, kind of your journey to where you got to now. And you know, we're gonna talk about culture a little bit, talk about organizations a little bit, but if you could just talk a little bit about how you got there, you know, from your perspective.
Thanks, Sue, and great for having me, and nice to be here with everybody today. My career was kind of defined by, and my life was kind of defined by new markets, new products, and new services, kind of the leading edge of market expansion and globalization over the last 35 years. I first went overseas a couple of years out of college to Saudi Arabia. And shortly thereafter, about 18 months thereafter, went to Hong Kong. So we were with PW, Pricewaterhouse, the old Pricewaterhouse firm before the merger. And we were part of the first group of foreign professionals living in Hong Kong, which was amazing back then, but really working to help foreign multinationals come into the Chinese marketplace, which was, you know, it's 1985. It was just raw. It was strange. It was weird. It was really pioneering, but it was really fascinating work. My claim to fame back then was we wrote the first payroll system for all the IBM employees in mainland China. We got the Chinese tax authority to accept, you know, their returns. And it was a monthly return, their returns digitally. So that was my technology claim to fame way back in the day.
Cool.
And so you know, after a 30-year career with PwC, I retired to do some more entrepreneurial things. Teaching has always been a passion, so teaching at USC Marshall School of Business. Shout out to any Trojans on the call. Wanted to really see this problem in the boardroom, which is really what we call a digital and cybersecurity leadership crisis, and DDN was really formed to really take the steps needed to fix that problem in the corporate boardroom. So I've been an explorer my whole career.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So keeping up the exploration.
That's great. So let's pick up on that. So I think what we're spending time, we always have a theme for the year, and we're spending time talking about organizational culture, which obviously expands a lot of things. But in your case, what I really want to focus on is some of these systemic issues that have come up and broadly. And of course, you know, some of them are much broader than organization culture, organizations. They're systemic as in hugely systemic. And so I do want us, because we're in the middle of a pandemic and we just had something happen in Texas. I mean, these are system failures. So I do want to get your view on that, because I think that you've got some perspective on that. And like to hear kind of what, you know, what do you see as you know, COVID's a systemic failure for sure. What are some lessons that you see that we could take away from this, and what do we do for going forward?
Yeah, the primary lessons usually it's a failure of leadership when we see these type of catastrophic failures. you. Mm-hmm. You know, so what starts to happen? There's kind of an anatomy of systemic failure. When systems start to spiral out of control, like we saw with COVID, like we saw certainly with the Texas energy situation, 12 years ago with the financial crisis of 2008, leaders who don't understand the systemic issues within the system, they have two options. They can either ignore the systemic failure and let's just take our chances, or they can shut the system down. So those are the only two options when systems start to spiral out of control and you don't understand the risks within the system. And so, you know, we saw that practice relative to COVID. We did both of those things and, you know, multiple versions of both of those things in the United States, and different countries took different approaches to it. So it was a leadership failure. Usually when you see catastrophic failure of this magnitude within systems, it's a leadership failure. So we're spending our time now really trying to educate and develop systemic systems thinking competencies, at the highest level of certainly corporate America. And it's actually a global issue. We've got a global client base to really fix that problem starting at the top down.
What are you noticing with your clients as far as how they're dealing with COVID on their company basis, in terms of how are they waiting for the vaccine? I mean, are they wholesaling, trying to bring people back? And of course, in manufacturing, it's a little bit different than it would be in tech.
It's all over the place. Given how chaotic, you know, the response has been to, you know, remediating the problem, and different states have different approaches with, you know, their vaccine rollouts. I was speaking to a colleague in Canada yesterday, and she says, you know, the vaccine rollout, the shortage is up there. She's gotten her first shot, and, you know, she doesn't know when she's getting her second shot. And, you know, she called it's been a disaster, the rollout up there. So we're still all over the place on this stuff. But the, companies, what I'm starting to see with companies is, you know, they had to deal with all the crisis management, certainly. And we all lived through that, right? This has been the largest systemic shared experience, you know, the world has ever had together. And so we actually wrote the book in the middle of that to kind of use it as a learning moment, right? So what the companies are starting to do is they're starting to recognize that, the system failed, and they survived, they thrived, some of them thrived. And they're starting to turn their sights to this issue of systemic innovation and systemic change. So starting to recognize that when large scale systems change, there's a business opportunity, and you have to understand the small impacts, the small changes in behaviors, needs and wants, and how those needs and wants shape and create new markets. So the smart ones are actually starting the strategic systems thinking side of the equation and figuring out how they can capitalize on the many, many massive changes that'll be coming off the back of this.
So my guess is, Bob, that you're working at a very high level, you know, in terms of systemic strategic thinking and such, you're working at a very high level. And tell us I have two questions, two parts. One is, how are you engaging leadership? How are they engaged, and how are you helping them work on that very high level in terms of strategy? So what are there will be business opportunities. I mean, certainly there's obvious companies that are doing well in the pandemic, and there's obvious ones that have to pivot, and everybody has to pivot no matter what, whether you're doing well or not, there's pivoting. Okay. So there's the pivoting aspect. So there's a strategic aspect of it. And then I also want you then to couple it with what are you seeing also from a culture perspective, how people are, this is a big two-part question. How people, how leaders are looking at the cultural aspect, or are they more focused on just the strategy and just pivoting their business model, if you will, or business product, you know, whatever.
Yeah, the cultural shift is a big shift, and you have to do a lot more things across an enterprise to really make this happen. At the leadership level, it's really, you know, the light goes on for leaders around these issues. You know, given their background, their experiences, and, you know, they've been kind of steeped as process thinkers. And, you know, being a systems thinker, you're not a process thinker, but it's a close cousin. You know, there's a non-linear aspect of being a systems thinker, right? It's not predictable if A happens and B, C, D, E, F, and G happen. But, you know, most executives have been taught, you know, in a linear way to look at their business, you know, from a process orientation. So, what we're doing with leadership is educating them. We're teaching them how to deal with these issues at USC. And then, you know, with what we're doing at DDN, you know, in the courses, the master classes that we're putting forward. And the light goes on very, very quickly for executives. And we've created frameworks, you know, at a governance level that they, help them understand the complex issue in a more cohesive way. But then, enabling that across the organization, at scale level is much, much different, but it has to start at the top, and you have to set that tone at the top, and the leaders have to, wake up to, the systemic threats and that we all live through and what failed and why it failed, and start to bring that systems orientation to the table. And then start to look at the strategic opportunities, but then getting it embedded within the corporation is a totally different undertaking. But it starts, with communications, education, and then getting people motivated to really think about these things. And we have, the good news is with a lot of this stuff, we're really talking about complex system science and bringing that into the corporation, bringing that into the boardroom. That concept of, that science of complex system science exists. It exists as in human healthcare. It exists in the natural world. So we've been studying complex systems in a biological sense for a while. We just haven't brought that thinking really into the domain of the business and the domain of the business system yet, or many other systems. And so we have a lot to learn from. We're not starting from scratch on this stuff. That's kind of the good thing. So, the learning curve is steep, but it's not a long learning curve. And they get up the learning curve very quickly, and then deploying it's another issue.
So let's pick up on that, Bob, if we could. I mean, looking at the people on the call are going to be either coaches, coaching leaders, or they're leaders themselves. So what would be some aspects of leadership? I want to kind of go into the leadership aspect of it, that you could point to, but skills, attributes, in terms of being a better systemic thinker. And that's kind of a huge order, but I want to kind of break it down a little bit. We've all had to become them. If we weren't before, you have to become one now, because there's obviously we're getting threats from outside, and we have to understand how we are in a system. So tell us a little bit more about a couple of skills that perhaps would break this down a bit.
Yeah. And if, again, there's things that we can learn from. If you look at high reliability organizations, so if you look at aerospace and defense, nuclear energy, they've always kind of dealt with the catastrophic impacts of failure in their industries. And, because if a nuclear power plant fails, it's a really big problem for a lot.
Ergo Japan. Yeah.
Daiichi Fukushima, right? If a plane falls out of the sky, and, parts of a plane were falling out of the sky a couple of days ago, it's death for everybody that's, on the plane, with 100% certainty, as well as, probably people on the ground. So those industries, actually, from a cultural perspective and from a skills and competency perspective, they do a couple things that other companies don't do. They're very reluctant to oversimplify. So they sweat the details. They don't oversimplify these issues. They're preoccupied with failure. As well, not just at the leadership level, but throughout the whole organization, they're preoccupied.
I like that. I like that a lot. Okay.
And then most importantly, they don't dismiss the outliers. They don't dismiss small issues or small risks. And that's really the big shift between enterprise risk management and what we were taught with Sarbanes-Oxley almost 20 years ago. When I had come back from Japan. And the firm, PwC, we had a lead role in that. We wrote the COSO framework. We used to teach, so that whole concept of enterprise risk management, became a thing back then, but it didn't contemplate the complexity of the world, the complexity of the systems that we're dealing with now. And it would tend to dismiss, the outliers and low probability events. And we can't do that now. We have to understand those outliers and how they impact the larger system. And I explain it like this to people, it's like the difference between, enterprise risk management and focusing on a flat tire. A car is a complex system. It's a complex mechanical system. It's a collection of parts that work together, right? So under ERM, we'd focus on the flat tire. As systems thinkers, we have to understand if that flat tire occurs, what's the impact on the journey that that passenger was on? And also, if that passenger is on the 405 here in California, how does that failure impact the thousands of other people in rush hour that are, you know, behind you now and, you know, impacting their broader journeys? So it's a, a shift.
I like that analogy a lot. I think it's so. So then how do we use that analogy to get more? I like the idea of, you know, sweat the details. How do we help people look at that in terms of applying the threat of COVID, the threat of, you know, kind of what's happened in the last year, and then again, parlay that into what we should be doing next?
Yeah. And so, and if you look at COVID, you know, we all lived through this, but, you know, you took what was a singular point of infection that, you know, could have been controlled, and look at how that cascaded. It started to threaten, and it did threaten, and it jeopardized when we were looking at 5-6%, you know, death rates, and it was just spreading like wildfire. This time it started, you know, last year, and it was jeopardizing the healthcare system, because healthcare systems have pretty much a finite capacity for ICU beds. There's only about 100,000 ICU beds in America.
Unbelievable.
So when it looked like we were going to cap that out, just think of what starts to happen, the backlog that starts to build up in the hospital system. If that death rate had continued at that pace, hospitals would have been overloaded. The healthcare system would have collapsed. People would have been dying in their homes.
Yeah.
And, you know, society would have basically stopped. And, you know, society didn't stop in a lot of respects, but it really was degraded. And so that healthcare system, that failure then started to cascade into economic systems, every business system, political systems, social systems. So that's the definition of a systemic risk,
sure.
A risk that fails and begins
across the board,
contaminate across the board in other systems. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, we lived through that. And, you know, the lesson there is, you know, we always learn from systemic failures. And we're pretty good at fixing the risks after these failures, the Space Shuttle Challenger, especially mechanical ones, right? Texas, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of reform down in Texas right now with the energy grid.
I hope so.
But we don't really think about the bigger picture. We make the fix a point in time, and we don't really make it a sustainable perspective with this view of the system. Although something happened today that was very important. President Biden signed an executive order forcing across multiple industries, from agriculture to pharmaceuticals to defense, you know, an activity and an exercise in supply chain risk. That's really a systemic
risk. I saw that. I didn't read it, but I saw the headline. So tell us more about that.
If you read the order, that's exactly what it is. It's focused on understanding systemic risk in these complex systems that have been built up, right? And the systems are, you know, every company is a complex system. It's an ecosystem. Every digital business system that is a subsystem within the business system, right? So there are systems of systems. There are subsystems. We just need to look at these things, you know, from a different perspective to really understand them and mitigate those issues.
So, again, I'm gonna do one more question, and I want to open it up for people to ask, because I'm sure they've got some ideas and questions to ask you as well. I want us to get a little bit more granular around how people on this call, and people, of course, going to listen to this far and wide, can be thinking about how they can think about the system of a corporation. So you've got, particularly culture, like how do the systems thinking can affect, you know, you talk about communication and messaging. Once this, for example, strategy, a pivoting of strategy, for example, I'm just trying to make up an example here, but, you know, pivoting of a strategy, and then how that gets messaged through the company. What is your experience with that? And what some advice do you have on that kind of thing?
Yeah, you know, the tactical issues there are really around transparency and understanding.
Right.
So bring some level of visibility into the system. And you know, anybody can be taught this stuff. It's not actually that foreign of a concept for
no.
people. The difficulty is really mapping the complexity of the systems that we've created. So when you've got thousands of parts within a complex system, mapping it, understanding it, understanding the dependencies between the parts. But the conceptual model is actually pretty achievable for anybody at any level within an organization. But mapping it and doing something about it is very, very different, and where the hard work comes and where the failure comes in. Transparency focused on, and the executive order mentions this, looking at single points of failure, critical points mm-hmm. of failure. If this thing fails, there's no redundancy to this part, and it's going to, you know, spread like ICU beds as a finite capacity is a critical point of failure in the healthcare system.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And then eventually shifting your sights from, you know, the downside risks, what can go wrong, to using those same skills, capabilities, and systems thinking competencies to starting to figure out what needs to go right in the system to drive mm-hmm. better outcomes, right?
So let's just say the contents, we got it down, whether the content is, I love what you said about, like, we try to simplify this stuff and it's just not simple. So let's say we got the content down. So where do you see the failure in communication? Because of course, that's my business. I'm in the business of communication. So I'm seeing, like, you could have a great strategy, a great product, whatever, but there's issues around execution because of communication, because of morale, because of, you know, all that. So what do you do when you see that kind of thing? How do you coach to that? How do you help support that?
Yeah. And, you know, communications, a lot of different modalities, a lot of different ways to communicate with employees and markets and consumers right now. And it's a never ending process, right? It's not, you know, you do it once and forget about it. You've got to have this cadence across all the different modalities, all the different messages.
Right.
And, you know, you hope, you know, what you know, and it's kind of a change model. So at the,
yep.
Think of a pyramid. So if you look at large scale change, you have to do three things. So communications, what you're trying to do there is you hope that most people, you know, tell me what I need to do and I'll do it, you know, and just get behind it. And, you know, they'll understand what they need to do and they'll have the ability to do it. And, you know, the next layer is really education. Teach me how to do it. I don't know how to do it. Teach me how to do it and I'll do it. That's really the next level of change. And then the final level of change, this is a model that we developed. Some of our org design guys at the firm developed this 20, 25 years ago. And the final layer, and you hope that's the smallest group, is I don't want to do it. I need a carrot or a stick or a motivation. Yeah. Show me why I should do it.
Right.
So it's communications, education, and incentives are really the three layers.
Sure. I like it.
Of lasting change. And okay. You know, the board has to create this cadence and the tone at the top across all of these domains, all of these dimensions, as do executive teams, and reinforce it, you know, consistently with their messaging and with their actions. So let me bring up another point.
Sure. What else did you read today?
We're seeing something interesting in cyber insurance. And what the New York Department of Financial Services has done, which is the regulator for the insurance industry, is they've come out with their cyber framework, and it's not law, but, you know, they regulate the industry, and, you know, when they come out with
sure.
it's highly encouraged that the insurers follow it. So what's happened with cyber insurance is companies, which is inherently systemic, right? So the digital business system is inherently systemic, and so you have. What hackers do, you know, in complex system science, you know, there's this principle that the systems grow complex for a reason. So some of the people on the call today might say, well, just make, you know, the world easier. Let's make, you know, these systems simpler, less complex. That's not going to happen for a simple reason. So complex systems grow complex because they serve a broader set of needs and wants. And so we've got almost 8 billion people on the planet. And, you know, frankly, we all have individual, unique needs and wants. So our systems have grown complex to fulfill the needs and wants of 8 billion people on the planet. There was like 4 billion people when I started my career, you know, 35 years ago. So we're not going to get rid of this complexity. It's inherent in the world that we've created. So our only option is to understand it and manage it better.
Right.
But right. So what New York DFS did is they said to the insurers, insurers were taking checks. Cyber insurance is going gangbusters back here. And the premiums are coming in. And, you know, what started to happen is the claims started coming. And they're not, it's not as profitable as an underwriting exercise as they had hoped. And
right.
The regulators have come in and say, now on the insurance industry, because you're part of the risk transfer approach, you have to actually, with your insureds, you have to understand systemic risk. If you're going to assume the risk, you have to understand the risks that you're assuming. Pretty simple.
Good idea.
Pretty simple concept.
They need
the regulators. It took the regulators to come in and force this, force the insurers to take this step and do it. So we're starting to see regulators from, Biden's executive order today, President Biden's executive order to that.
Right.
The Chief Justice of the Delaware Supreme Court said that boards need to demonstrate credibly their proactive understanding of systemic risk. So the regulators are waking up and holding us to a higher standard.
Great.
Frankly, we've leadership and boards have been, borderline negligent on these issues.
Nice. Okay. Well, that's great. That's awesome. Okay. So in your book, you've got a model, a framework called Stiepled Framework.
Yeah. So
tell us more about that.
We started this book right when the first death was announced in California, and we published it on June 1st. Stiepled's an established framework in strategic management, and it's really those forces that shape companies in the world, the environment, and the systems that they have to work within. And so it's part of the systemic innovation, the systemic change thinking that we're trying to embed in leadership. There's a framework in there also called the Director Framework, which is the eight parts of every digital business system. And we want executives to understand that IT and the digital system isn't just the singular domain. It's this collection of very complex domains from data science to architectures, to emerging technologies, to cybersecurity, to regulatory risk communications. Stiepled, if you look at the forces that every company has to deal with, the social, technological, environmental, economic, political, legal, ethical, and demographic shifts, those are the forces of systemic influence and change that companies have to understand. So understanding small changes, small behavioral changes when needs and wants change, Airbnb is a good example. In the middle of a pandemic, who wants to rent their house to a stranger, right? Or who wants to rent a house, a room from a stranger? You don't know what the hygiene, what the cleanliness standards are. So last April, Airbnb's business collapsed. I think it's like 72%, shrank by 72%. And, they don't even know whether it's ever going to come back to what it was before. So on both the supply and demand side, that small behavioral change, hygiene, cleanliness in the midst of a global pandemic, destroyed their business model. So we want to teach with that Stiepled framework how people look at the strategic lens and the strategic opportunities of their business. And they all go through those eight dimensions, usually concurrently. And, with COVID, each one of those eight dimensions in the Stiepled framework is up for grabs, is going through massive, massive transformation. Mm-hmm. So understanding those details, those small behavioral changes, the economic changes, the legal, the regulatory changes, the political changes, that's the key towards systemic change that business leaders need to start to understand in terms of growth and success post COVID.
Right. So it's not just pivoting your product.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, that's why we included it in there. Yeah.
So can you take us through an example? I mean, I don't know if you want to take us through an example of a client or just an unnamed client or somebody. I mean, Airbnb is a great example, but take us through maybe a client with those eight different points.
Yeah, well, whether it's all eight or not, that was one. Airbnb was one, small behavior change. I think you see with Zoom, here we are on Zoom, right? So this video engagement, their market exploded. They were the flip side. Their market exploded because of this new behavior. And, they had the right technology at the right time. They were able to put this forward in the way that their interface works and the simplicity of their platform, stepped into that behavioral change, that social change, if you will, politically, right? So Biden's executive order today, forcing these industries to understand the systems of their industries. The legal we've talked about, Chief Justice cites comments, New York DFS, their comments, demographic shifts. I think demographic shifts are kind of interesting with how you know, the virus, you know, attacked certain racial demographics as well as certain age-based demographics. And, you know, frankly, you know, our approach to here in the United States with, you know, how we care, how we look out for the elderly versus, a society like Japan, where I spent 9 years, you know, make us rethink kind of those, you know, those demographic shifts, changes, and, you know, how the world serves everyone's needs, just not the needs of, you know, a select few.
Since you're such a systems guy, I mean, you're really thinking on such a high level. Can you point to, this is a hard question, because if you're looking at countries like New Zealand and Australia that are they're so smaller, and they're also islands, it's easier, that have been successful. Taiwan, I mean, there's been some successful countries that have dealt with COVID. And the United States is so much bigger and also complex and bullheaded, I guess. So can you point to some countries that have done this well? They've looked at it from a systemic perspective, some companies. I mean, I was just trying to like get some examples of success.
Yeah, well, if you look at kind of the distinction between New Zealand and the United States, we didn't approach this as a systems thinker. We didn't approach the problem as a systems thinker. We were putting our finger, you know, in the dike that was about to burst.
Tried.
And, yeah, you know, what New Zealand did is they approached this as a systems thinker, and they understood the whole system, and, you know, they locked down the whole system, but they, you know, that lockdown was a shorter period of time, shorter duration, and it enabled them to reboot the system, you know, on the back end a lot more effectively. You know, we had this kind of patch of approaches, and we got the outcomes we got for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like how we look at the digital business system, and how the digital business system, the parts of the digital business system, you know, drive business value and how you protect that business value. It's like cybersecurity exploits systemic weakness, right? Cybersecurity, to use another metaphor, is like, you know, the complex system of the human body. Cybersecurity is like the mosquito, right? So mosquito always has the ability in a complex system to extract some value for itself. Now, if that mosquito happens to have malaria or something else, you've got a bigger problem in the whole system. But complex systems just breed that kind of natural frailty or that kind of natural risk. Mm-hmm. So we've got to understand those risks and mitigate them accordingly.
So given what you see right now, let's just stick to, if we can, the United States, if you're conferring with Biden, let's say President Biden, what do you tell him?
Yeah, well, I think he's thinking along the right ways. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of the business system, what our recommendation is, and we've made this recommendation, and we're actually working two conversations in the White House from a couple different perspectives through the SEC primarily, is you have to do three things really focused around the digital business system. And, you know, so a data point for everybody in the call, 60% of the world's GDP goes through or is supported directly by digital systems. So the world is digital. These tools work. We know the future is digital. So we have to understand the business systems, the digital business systems, much, much better. And there's three parts to the solution. There's getting people skilled, the right people on boards and leadership functions, training people to understand these issues. It's how we organize ourselves at the board level. It's really how we set up committee structures at the board level to govern these things. Corporate level. And then we have to change the way we approach risk, and you recognize that new worlds create new risks. And, you know, we need a much more effective approach to understand systemic risk. And we're heading down that path, right? The executive order was the first salvo towards achieving that. I think we do need a coordinated public-private approach on these.
Yeah, that was actually, I was just going to bring that up. The idea of how do businesses, like Bill Gates is an example of like the guy that would be the guy to do it, right? Because he's been in both worlds. And I just, I wonder what your opinion is on that. But I was going to ask you about like, how do we get these public-private partnerships? I mean, you know, as of yesterday, I don't know what the market did today, but as of yesterday, we got more billionaires. Got lots of money floating around that could do a lot for poverty, you know, a whole host of stuff. So how do we get these partnerships going?
Well, yeah, if we look at what happened with the financial crisis, 2008, that was a systemic failure, right? So, you know, as the mortgage mechanisms, the mortgage tools and products and the housing market started to spiral out of control, we saw the systemic failure of the capital markets system, too big to fail, right? That's another example of a systemic failure. So the regulation that came in on the back of that, Dodd-Frank, you know, Dodd-Frank forced banks to look at and the financial systems players to understand their role in the system. And so if you look at disclosures now, you know, banks typically disclose whether they're a critical part of the system of the capital market system. So regulation does have a role to play in forcing private sector to understand this. And, you know, think about AWS. So if AWS goes out as a single point of failure for many companies, how many companies are going to come to a standstill because their business system runs on AWS on the back of Amazon?
And Zoom, same thing, same idea. Yeah.
Zoom, same thing, Salesforce. So the tech industry has a higher bar, I think, that the regulators are going to hold them to and accountable to. And it's really, you know, I think we can accomplish a lot and have a huge ROI with just educating people around these issues. And then the technology approaches, how we monitor systemic risk. We're starting to see some solutions pop up for that. You know, different vendors have different products that are dealing with some of these critical points of failure, but we're not taking a holistic approach to it, you know, like we need to.
So who aren't. So who needs to lead this? I mean, again, you mentioned President Biden's order about the supply chain, which I think is awesome. But do we need a Bill Gates? I mean, who's going to lead this? I mean, I've often thought that it needs to be a business. I mean, when you think about COVID, I mean, who led the initial stay at home was tech companies. You know, they basically, before the government said, you've got to have stay at home, the tech companies are already doing it. So, I mean, and obviously we're in the tech industry. I just feel like there needs to be some, you know, a Bill Gates, somebody like that, that's going to be working with government. So whether it's state government, so how do you see that? Do you see that happening? And if so, like, and I'm not necessarily name names, but I mean, how is this going to happen?
Yeah, I think we're starting to see the signs of it happening. And we always see the signs of it happening when we have these kind of catastrophic failures. So we finally wake up to it and, you know, leaders lead, and leaders lead, you know, by doing the things that we're seeing happening right now. Kind of an interesting, you know, if you go back to the World Bank report that, so Gates wrote the foreword to the World Bank report in 2017, 2018, I think. And so the World Bank report looked at the impacts of a global pandemic. And we talk about this in the book. And he laid out, you know, 5-10 things that need to happen to prevent a global pandemic from becoming a global pandemic. And you know, we understood there were many, many people that understood what would happen in a global pandemic, but still it happened, right? It happened on our watch, and Gates led, you know, in kind of funding, you know, the research that went into understanding the system of, you know, human virology and the human body and how that would cascade into the other systems. So you need the right leader. And that's exactly what we're trying to do, teach leaders to wake up to this moment. And it's not one leader, it's multiple leaders in business and in the private sector. And we're trying to get to them as possible to teach them about it. It's exactly what we're doing. It's an education moment. And, you know, we have the perfect learning moment that we can all relate to, and it's COVID, right? So that's why we wrote the book.
And then of course, Bill just wrote I don't know, I guess it's a book about climate change. So that's also on obviously part of the system as well.
Yeah.
Obviously it's all related, but anyway, thank you. That's a good way to end, I think. I really appreciated your perspective and your examples. And I just want to reiterate so your information so people can go and find you. Again, it's Bob Zukis on Twitter, Bob Zukis, and also on LinkedIn. And thegreatreboot.info is the book, the latest book. And just want to, again, thank you so much for joining us. I love talking high level like this. So it's great. It's been fun for me. So I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, Sue. Thanks for having me. And thanks everybody for joining in.
Yeah. Yeah. And then on this next Wise Talk on March 22nd at 3 p.m. Pacific, we have Diane Kaufman. She's the author of HR Bullcrap, revolutionizing your workplace culture. So, the title is provocative. I can't wait to meet with her. So please join us on March 22nd. All right. Thanks, Bob. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sue. Take care.
And everyone stay safe. Aloha.